Hi, y'all, and welcome to another episode of The Early Team. This week, I speak with Charles Mbarguru. Charles is head of business operations at Zestworld, which enables creators to control and monetize their IP rights. Previously, Charles spent extensive time building and leading consulting teams. In this conversation, we talk about his journey as a consultant, and eventually transitioning to the startup world, how his passion for entertainment and using technology as the connector led him to Zestworld, and what he had to learn and unlearn in order to succeed in this new role. With that, let's jump in, and I hope you enjoy. Welcome to Rob Conversations with contributors at early stage startups. Immersed in ambiguity and navigating the unknowns, we talk about how they figured it out or didn't. I'm your host, Shaheen Mosadegzad, and this is The Early Team. Charles, welcome to The Early Team. It's so great to have you.
Thank you for having me, Shaheen. I'm looking forward to the conversation.
Before we jump into your day-to-day and what keeps you busy, we'd love to hear a little bit about your background, your story, and how it got you to today.
Great question. So I'm originally from Houston, Texas, born and mostly raised there. I also, my family's from Nigeria, so there's a little bit of that in my life and a little bit of some other cities. I went to college at Carnegie Mellon University. I studied chemical engineering there, which was a great 4 years. As people say, you meet like kind of like your community, your tribe there that kind of like
right.
drives and sort of, you know, walks alongside you for the rest of life. And
yeah,
I guess sort of a big part of my story was for the first sort of 18, 20 years of my life felt like it was sort of being guided and moved by others, be it family or Actually, more specifically, family in this case.
Yeah.
And so when I got to college, was the first time that I really had my eyes opened and I was exposed to just a whole multitude of different career paths and trajectories, lifestyles. And I think it was like for the first time I really sort of realized that I could kind of choose and carve my own path in this life, if you believe in one life, right? And so college was just a huge turning point for me because, again, I went in sort of, I did graduate with an engineering degree, but I kind of went in with an expectation and understanding that, you know, my life post college was going to sort of look a certain way, and it actually looked a
right.
completely different way. And so that was the first time that I was exposed, like as I had been mentioning earlier, just to just different ideas. And I'm sure we'll get to it in this conversation, but I really, really kind of found who I was, at least to some extent, right? You kind of are always finding yourself.
Yeah.
And that kind of shaped my trajectory a little bit.
I got you. I feel like we're also living parallel lives where going to school, you kind of have a perception of others and what they want you to be. And
right.
So in a different life, I would have been a doctor, but here we are. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about the post-college life. As you graduated with mechanical engineering, where did you end up and how did that process work? And then we'll talk about how you eventually ended up at Zestworld.
Sure. So this is actually a great story. So I believe this was like a week or two before graduation. I was, you know, again,
okay.
prepared to sort of leave college with this chemical engineering degree. And
right.
I had sort of like one of, you know, many existential moments where I was like, I can't, this is not what I want to do. But here I am about to graduate from college, and I didn't really know exactly what not being an engineer looked like. I knew what my parents, my family expected of me, but I really just didn't have a clear path. And so
right.
what I kind of set out to do was just sort of just like I spent like a day just in my dorm just sort of figuring out, all right, what's next? Because, you know, my folks were coming up. They're flying in. They're going to be asking like, all right, so what are you going to do next since you're not going to pursue what we thought you were going to pursue? And so I just really thought about like where my interests were. I thought about like the things that I'd been exposed to in college. And I kind of just sort of realized that I wanted to do something in the realm of like business development, perhaps some sales. I knew that I sort of liked consulting from what I heard about my friends talking about consulting. You know, those all kind of seemed cool. And
Right.
but I was like also sort of like running up against like this like debt, not necessarily a deadline, but just like the vast approaching graduation date.
Yeah.
And I think I probably was Googling just like startup jobs or just like I think it was just like, all right, what can I do? And I Googled, and my return, what returned was this was with a program that no longer exists, but it was called the Startup Institute, which at the time was, I guess, essentially a career accelerator. Their goal was to be a career accelerator for folks that were in, I guess, more traditional roles that were looking to make that transition into tech, basically. And so I saw this program. It was going to be in New York City, which I'd always had a dream of moving to New York City. I didn't know how I was going to get there, but I was like, all right, this seems cool. It's in tech, it's in New York. All right, it's going to cost me some money, but you know, I was fortunate enough to get, you know, as part of my graduation gift, some money from my family. And so I said, you know, let's make it happen. And so I did. And so I applied for what was then the first cohort of the Startup Institute within their sales and business development track. Had no idea what I was in for. I had no idea what I was going to do, but I figured, you know, at least this will give me perhaps some inspiration. It'll give me something to do as I kind of figure out what my life was like. And so
Right.
I did that, and that was a journey, and a long journey, but it was a journey nonetheless. And I learned a lot, and I was exposed to a lot pretty early on, and I met some, you know, great connections, some of whom I'm still connected with today.
Yeah.
And I realized that that going into a program like that was so new, that was still kind of finding its legs, as I was finding my own legs as well, I realized that there was a bit too much chaos in the beginning for me. And so
Got it.
I knew that from that experience, I wanted something a bit more formal and formalized rather. And I realized maybe dipping my toe into a traditional job may actually be really helpful in this context. And so that's what I did after my sort of initial stay in New York City. I actually went to work for AT&T and their
Okay.
business leadership development program, which was essentially kind of creating, I guess, in a way, like I guess their idea there was that they'd be the next generation of business leaders. And that was also a unique experience as well. That was kind of the second phase of my initial career. And I realized that I did not want to work in a large company. I think AT&T was so great in that, like, you learn so many different frameworks of, I guess you can say, just being a problem solver, learning just general business skills. But I knew that I felt so small,
Right.
and I wanted something that would feel a bit more loose and freewheeling, like my prior experience in New York. And so, long story short, there is that I after my the first sort of that was a rotational program. So after the first rotation, I had a decision to make. I had to decide if I was going to stay on for another year and a half, 2 years, and finish up the remaining three rotations, or essentially, you know, figure out something else. And so I decided to figure out something else. I figured, you know, I've made it this far, and I've learned a lot, and I'm going to just continue to sort of figure something out. Ironically, you know, again, going back to sort of the parents' expectations, my
Right.
folks were just like, all right, you know, you've had your fun for this first year after college. You need to go to grad school. And so I begrudgingly applied to grad school for, I couldn't even tell you what it was at this point. It's such a lifetime ago, but I did apply for grad school. And in that process of, you know, applying and getting accepted, I actually received an email through my alma mater's like professional sort of career and professional development center. I guess for some
Right.
reason I hadn't turned off that I was like graduated. Something happened, but I guess I somehow was cold emailed by the consulting firm that I worked at for almost over 7.5 years after that, and they reached out, and I
Wow.
was like, oh well, consulting always seemed like a great idea. A lot of my friends went into consulting, and it felt like, all right, for people like me who are still figuring out what they want to do with their lives, that might actually be a really good route to take. And so It's funny, sometimes I think, things work in some mysterious ways. My first day of grad school is also the same day as my first day of my job in consulting. And I had a decision to make, and I decided to just come back to New York City and try out consulting for a change. And that was, and again, that really just sort of like stemmed from just me, again, just yearning for a role in which I could, that would really drive impact, but I'd also sort of be able to build a foundation. And that was what I was sort of sold in the interview process. And I don't mean sold the negative way. I was like, oh, that's what I came to understand to be a part of my role at that consulting firm. And also, I felt like I could also build upon the business operation skills that I learned at AT&T and the sort of the sales and business development experience I learned at the Startup Institute.
I gotcha. Okay, so if I'm hearing correctly, then you had this one day before graduation, what do I want to do? And a lot of things that actually came about, you did pursue. So the intention was there of, hey, business development sounds interesting, going to consulting sounds interesting, and over the years that kind of just laid it out. So in a way you manifested it for yourself.
Manifestation
And
is the perfect way to describe that. Absolutely.
great. And I love that. And so if we can talk about your time as a consultant coming in, what a consultant can mean different for many people. What were your responsibilities coming in? And you talked about helping grow the business. What was the environment like? Was it a small team, a larger team? What were things like early
Great.
days?
That's a great question. So, I guess maybe a good way to sort of start the conversation is sort of kind of establishing what consulting at least meant for me and my career. So, the way I viewed kind of consulting in our context was businesses. In our case, we were only operating in the financial services and have a variety of different needs, and they need folks to either, create a strategy for them to move forward because they're to solve a business need, or they've actually identified the business need, they've identified the strategy, and they need folks to sort of implement that strategy. The firms that I work for operated kind of the latter. I think when you think of the former, you think of like the McKinseys of the world, the BCGs, etc. The firm that I work for was very much focused, a little bit of strategy, but really focused on implementation. And so over the course of the 7+ years that I was in consulting, I was essentially working on the implementation piece of a variety of different projects. And so when I say I was like driving impact, I was sort of really driving impact amongst like my individual teams. And my teams range from, I was a part of a 100 plus, project or rather program that to redesign and redeploy the core infrastructure for a really large international retail bank. I also where I led before I left, I actually led a team of about 7 people, give or take, at different stages of that cycle. We were implementing the third party risk strategy for another sort of international investment bank. And so, to kind of answer your question, so my role looked really different depending on the project that I was working on. And we were engaged, I was engaged to sort of meet a specific need or a specific implementation project.
Gotcha. And based on conversations that I've had with others who've gone the consultancy route, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems that when you're in this sector, you're getting exposure to many industries, many sizes of teams, many stages of companies, things like that, and you have to kind of learn on the fly and be able to contribute. Is that correct?
I would say for me, that was partially correct. So the firm that I worked for, since we only operate in the financial services, that was the industry that I was sort of focused on, was sort of exposed to. But I think the thing that was really critical for me was that I had to learn really quickly how to, and I hate to use the word operate in a general term, but really just like operate in a variety of different contexts. So for example, when I mentioned that I led a team where we were implementing a third party risk strategy, prior to that role, I had never even touched third party risk, I mean, let alone risk management. And so I had to quickly ramp up on third party risk management practices so that I could better sort of kind of, I could better operationalize my team and essentially
Got it.
put my team in the right places so that we could be successful in that project. And so I would say there was a lot of sort of context switching because although I had perhaps in the early part of my consulting career, I'd really built a strong foundation of presentation skills, analysis skills. I had to sort of be able to utilize that and to quickly switch to between different contexts over the course of my 7 years in adulting.
Got it. So if we can dig in a little bit deeper on the context switching, did you have like a process in play over time that you were able to refine of being able to quickly switch, understand, and begin implementation, whether it's leading team or contributing yourself?
The process was really simple for me. It was immediately and quickly understanding the teams that we were going to be living with for the next sort of months. In my case, I actually spent about 3.5 years with that specific client. So really understanding the subject matter. And so in that case, it was third-party risk management, and also understanding the team dynamics, because especially with sometimes, in many cases, consultants have not the best reputation as far as like coming in and just kind of doing things their way and kind of like breaking things and just not really sort of being respectful of the teams that are already there. And so I had learned pretty early on that wasn't the most successful strategy, at least for me and my personality. And so I really spent the biggest sort of takeaway for me and when I moved between different projects and teams was really sort of taking the time to really understand the teams and the context with which they're working in, and also understanding their bottlenecks, also understanding their, I guess, honestly, to be really frank, understanding like what like kind of keeps them up at night, like what they're afraid of. And because especially in these environments that are pretty high pressured, there are a lot of pressures that are coming in from leadership, coming from tendential teams. So really understanding, all right, like what are they really afraid of, so that I can, if anything, we can kind of help them sort of manage up, right? Manage to the side, or in a few cases, even manage down.
I gotcha. Okay, so seven or so years, great foundation, getting access to various contexts. At what stage did you then start thinking about, okay, what's next? And what was kind of going through your mind in determining what next could actually mean?
That's a great question. So for me, the stage with which I kind of felt like perhaps my time in consulting was coming to an end was in my last engagement, I had grown this team. I had essentially created a practice at the firm that I was working at. And I really felt like I'll back up a little bit. One of the things that I loved most about consulting was being able to train team members. I love being able to develop folks from beginning to end, figuring out like where their weak points are or their areas of development are, excuse me, and really sort of hyper focusing on them and helping them get to where they need to be. Because one of the other things about consulting that people don't often talk about is that it is very much a stepping stone for a lot of people's careers. And understanding that for almost all the people that I worked with, they very much viewed consulting as a means to an end. I was hyper-focused on ensuring that I was doing what I can to help them develop in the areas they wanted to develop in. And so that was a part of my job that I really, truly adored and I still love to this day. But I realized that after a while, my role, I was spending a lot of time in that piece of the role, and I wasn't really having fun anymore. I was having fun developing my teams, but I wasn't really growing. I wasn't learning. I was just sort of doing this on repeat, and I wasn't being fulfilled. And so about like right before the pandemic or so, I realized like this is, you know, I think it's time for me to start thinking about like what's next for me. Because I essentially spent so much time in consulting, not really knowing what I was going to do next. And I realized that, okay, now it's time for me to think about, do I stay, right? Which, looking unlikely, not feeling really fulfilled, kind of feeling like I'm on autopilot, or do I think about what my next challenge is? Or what my next challenge should be.
Okay, I got you. And before we start talking about it, one thing I do want to call out is it sounds like you're already in a way getting the startup experience, because you mentioned helping individuals from end to end, figuring out their gaps, staying hyper focused, which sounds a lot like being a startup. I think there's sometimes they're like, once you become a manager, your team is your product. You're no longer working on a product.
Yeah.
Walk us through that time frame of then deciding, okay, I am going to then look for other areas I may want to explore. And how did you decide on what would be next? Like, what areas did you explore? What any exercises that you went through, things like that?
That's a great question. So I think the answer is twofold for me. The first piece was, I think, like everybody, the pandemic offered a lot of time of just sort of reflection, right? And really, like,
yes.
I personally live in New York City, right? And I live in a little studio. And so I had a lot of time within my four walls where I just was sitting there and like really thinking about my life, not just from a career standpoint, but from all aspects of my life, right? And so,
right.
One of the things that one of the blessings of the pandemic for me was just the increased flexibility that I had to sort of meet my own personal needs. And as you know, as we kind of got to a place in the pandemic of a new normal, I realized that the flexibility that I had kind of grown accustomed to that allowed me to really kind of thrive in my own way during the pandemic, given the fires that were happening in the world, I realized that that wasn't necessarily complementary with the career that I was in at that point. And not to say that that's a wrong thing. That was just that for me, that's what I realized I needed for me to thrive. And so that was like a big piece. And that was like one of the markers of me thinking about, what are that might be something I should sort of consider in my next career. The second sort of facet that I was kind of considering was, earlier on when I was in, actually, this is when I was at AT&T, and I was really thinking about, like, I don't know that I love this sort of big, behemoth of a corporation. I don't know if that's complementary with my skill set. I was thinking a lot about, I was also thinking a lot then about what was next. And I was actually having a conversation with a friend, and we were kind of strategizing about careers and what we wanted to do. And he'd asked me, what do you love? And anyone that knows me knows that I love entertainment and I love films. I could talk to you for probably way too long about just my favorite movie, what I like about it, and television, the same thing goes there as well. And so I was like, is a career in entertainment, is that feasible? And I kind of thought about it. Then I was like, it's not feasible again, just given some of my own sort of background and just not really feeling like I had room to grow in some other areas. I was like, yeah, that'd be cool, but that's not going to happen. And so I really just sort of parked that thought back in the far depths of my head. And so fast forward to sort of me thinking about where I wanted to go next, I knew when I was looking at the sort of the flexibility that I wanted in my career, and I also thought about, all right, well, if I could like figure out something in the entertainment space, that would be amazing. And so I really spent a lot of time just kind of digging through what that would look like. And I knew that tech could be a really great avenue for me from a flexibility standpoint, more for the most part. Not all tech companies are the same, as I'm sure you know. But I knew that tech probably would offer me the kind of environment that I know I needed to succeed. And so I thought about that. And then I also thought about entertainment. And I was like, well, I would love to work. It's the thing that I love most. It's the thing that I think about. I spend most of my time just reading articles about what's happening in the industry. And I was thinking to myself, there has to be a way that I can kind of mirror all this knowledge that I've gained into a career so that I'm not wasting my time completely. And so that's kind of where I started to coalesce around those two areas. And I felt like tech was a pretty good connector of those two things. And so that is essentially where my head was sort of thinking about it when I was thinking about what my next career move would be.
Gotcha. Okay. So we're exploring entertainment, tech as kind of the avenue in between. How did you come across Zest World? What was the conversations like? Did you apply and kind of waited for someone to reply back to you? Did you meet somebody there? What was that process like for you as you made the transition from a large company to then coming on at Zest World?
That's a great question. So, how I landed at Zest World. So, I guess I have to kind of backpedal a bit. I knew that, again, I mentioned to you that I'd felt kind of really stagnant in my consulting career. And so I knew that I needed something that would also jolt me. I guess in a way that was like a third facet of what I was looking for in my career. And so I also sort of recognized that something smaller, something where I kind of had my teeth sunk in would probably be the best route for me. And I essentially just like started looking. I was like, are there any like tech firms that are like operating in the entertainment space that would be interesting? Because I did think about like, well, does it make sense to just like work for an entertainment company like a traditional film or television studio? I wanted I and I that those all seemed great, and but I wanted something that was actually I wanted an organization that was actually using tech to enable that was using tech to sort of enable, you know, the audience sort of engage with their favorite pieces of entertainment. And I also was looking at something. One of the other things that I didn't love about the traditional entertainment industry is that it kind of, not it kind of, it, they really don't, they're really incentivized by finding things that will stick with the audience, and they're not really incentivized by like creating and developing talent and looking at the talent first. And by talent, I mean like the folks that actually write and create the entertainment that we know and love. And so when I was looking at a lot of these roles and at these big traditional firms, I felt like there wasn't really anything that was felt like very tech-centric. It felt like a response to a Netflix or an Amazon Prime Video, whatever. And those are great companies, but again, huge. And you know how I felt about a huge company already. And I wanted something that felt a little scrappy. And so I really just did like a lot of people do. I just searched and I crawled, I searched, I and I applied, right? And I'm actually part of this network. And sorry, I'm jumping around a little bit here, but I also knew the kind of, I also identified the kind of role that I knew that I could be really impactful in. I knew that I had been able to sort of context switch pretty quickly. I knew that I'd gained a sort of foundational skill set to sort of implement and execute things quickly. And so I knew that something in that sort of business operations, chief of staff sort of realm would probably make the most sense for me at my in my career at this point, because I knew that that's a way in which I can actually contribute versus I'm not a, I don't have prior experience being a designer. I don't have prior experience being an engineer. Those aren't career paths that I was interested in. And also, I actually loved sort of the aspects of the business operations that I got to do in my consulting career. And so I knew that I'd kind of coalesced around that role type. As I'm sure you know, at every company, those roles, the titles mean something different. They don't mean the same. Some people have chief of staff, some people have head of business operations, some people have head of operations, some people have a CEO, COO doing all those jobs. And so that became a new challenge for me. I was like, how do I find the role at the company that I want if it exists? And so I actually joined OnDeck, which I know you're familiar with, and I was exposed to a lot there. And one of the things I was exposed to was the Chief of Staff Network, which is essentially a network of community of chiefs of staffs. And so obviously I wasn't a chief of staff yet, but I knew that I want, but I they had they had like a sort of a weekly digest of roles. And so I was like, well, they're already doing the work that I'm trying to do of like sort of like crowdsourcing all the roles that are kind of in that business operation chief of staff. So let me subscribe and see what happens. I see this role at Zest role become up 1 week, and I was like, that's interesting. I mean, first of all, like literally, there are very, very, very few companies that are operating on sort of the precipice of entertainment technology, and which is exactly what I was looking for. And I see this role, I see, and they're also, it's a creator first platform. I'm like, I'm gonna apply. Didn't think anything of it because, as most people know, when you apply to a role, especially a role that's at a company that's exciting, that's doing something cutting edge, you're one. You feel like one of a million. And so I applied, and I thought nothing of it. Weirdly enough, right after, maybe a few days after I applied for the role, a friend of mine who works in the audio space had asked me to sort of grab lunch, just casually, nothing crazy about it. We grab lunch about every quarter or so, and we have lunch. I actually tell them about some of the other sort of entertainment roles I'm applying for that I actually had started interviewing for. I didn't even mention Zest role because I had just applied, didn't hear anything. And then that night after our lunch, he texted me. He's like, "Hey, did you apply for a role at Zest role?" I was like, "How did you? I mean, yeah, but how did you know?" So long story short, my boss actually used to run film and television at Gimlet Media and then at Spotify. And so Gimlet Media is a podcast company that he was actually one of the first sort of employees at. And so him, my friend, and my boss had actually had that connection just because they both sort of were trafficking in the audio circles, if you will. And so my boss hit him up and was like, "Hey, do you think, hey, should I talk to this guy?" And my friend was like, "Well, I've never worked with Charles. We're just friends, but you should talk to him and see what, and see what happens." And I guess, as they say, the rest is history.
Dang, it again, just continue to manifest out in the world and things are happening.
Manifestation is huge for me. I'm a big manifester.
I believe it as well. So you get reached out, you start having conversations, you decide to join the company. Mm-hmm. On day one, you're showing up to, how big was the company when you joined? Is that small?
Oh, the company when I joined was about nine of us. Nine. Yeah. Oh, actually, including me, nine. Yeah.
Okay, so you're going from your specific team being 7, 8, 9 people to then your entire team is 9 people. What was that like for you, making that huge shift and showing up on day one?
I mean, it was wild. It was so wild because I had never been so close in proximity to the belly of the beast, as they say, right? I never had been so. I knew what the. It's like, I obviously interviewed for the role. I understood. I met some of the team. I understood that, like, the company is so small. But I don't think you truly, really understand what it means to be an early sort of operator until you actually are in that seat and you're just like, "Oh, wow, like, I really am running human resources. I really am sort of wearing all these different hats." And so that it was, I think, in plain terms, culture shock to me, because I did not fully grasp what it was that I was entering into. And I was excited about it, but I did not fully understand until I actually got into the seat.
I gotcha. And before we dig into it, if we can take a quick step back, if you can tell us what Zest World is, and then the role that the job title that you thought you were going into Zest World and what that meant, because I'm sure that didn't always apply.
Yeah, of course. And Zest World is a creative platform for the comic book industry. We serve our comic book creators and artists and writers. And so the way we sort of see ourselves is that we aim to be the toolkit for comic book creators that does not exist today. And so we have two products that have launched and a third product that's launching soon. Our first product is a digital comic subscription. So folks can, create their comics and publish on our platform. So I'm going to actually change a little bit. It is a digital publishing service for comic book creators. That's the first product that we launched with. Our second product that we launched in the last, maybe about a month ago, is digital commissions. Something that is extremely familiar to comic book fans is when you go to a comic convention, right, you see your favorite creator and you love their style and the way in which they design their art. You can request a commission, right, in person, say, "Hey, I really want a profile pic in the style of Shaheen issue number one, right? If you will.
Yeah.
And so they will do that for you on the spot. And so we are actually digitizing that whole, we're actually digitizing that whole process through our digital commissions tool, that so folks know that that's rolled and commission artwork from their favorite artists. And the next sort of tool that we actually just announced at San Diego Comic-Con is an IP rights tool. And so a big part of why Zestful was founded and a big part of the reason why we exist is comic book creators are being excised from the insane returns that you see their work is based off of. I mean, you can look at,
yeah,
I won't say their names, but you can look at the big two sort of players in the space, and these films right. and television projects are making billions of dollars, and creators are being completely shut out of that process. And so we aim to sort of help them manage their IP, manage the IP that they mm-hmm. create. This industry is literally built off of their backs, and so we're essentially taking the power back for them, and we're going to help them through our platform.
That's so cool. And actually, as a side note here, I recently saw Alex Ohanian post about the commission that he did
yes.
for his wife and daughter, Serena yes. Williams. And I was like, oh, Zestful. Like, I know someone there.
Yes.
That
yes.
was really cool seeing it. Yeah. So that's really exciting.
That was a huge moment Let's for talk- us, and we're still really excited about it, honestly.
It's exciting and something to be proud of. Let's talk about your specific role.
Mm.
What was the job title description that you thought you were coming in, and what has it transitioned into or grown into?
That's a great question. And I will say right off the bat, what I thought of the role and what I'm doing now isn't so far off, actually. I just didn't know
right.
what it was and I was getting into in the first place. So
yeah.
the role that I applied for, quote unquote, was business operations lead. And so I essentially yeah. lead and drive all business operations. And so my understanding of the role was really being able to sort of wear all the hats to sort of keep the business running. And so understanding and creating processes by which our business can run smoothly, quickly, so that the folks that are building the products, the folks that are designing the products can really do that and not sort of think about,
yeah.
all right, how do we, like, what's our insurance situation? What's, you know, what are these other things? And so that was the first part of the role. The other part of the role that I guess maybe I knew about but didn't fully grasp was also being what I like to call like a force multiplier for our CEO and founder, Christian Liberti. And so helping him execute on, you know, strategies that we want to move forward with, thinking through partnerships and who we should work with to sort of help, you know, again, our creators sort of be their best selves and be the most successful selves. And so that was the role as it was defined to me in the beginning. And honestly, that is the role that I'm in now. I think, like I said earlier, what I fully didn't grasp was just like, I just had never been in the seat before. I never really understood
yeah.
what all of those things meant. Like, what does it mean to that we are a fully remote company across the U.S. And so we have folks in a number of different states, and you have to like register your employees in these states, and what do all these things mean, right? And that was what I learned, and I'm learning, and I'm operating in.
Gotcha. I'm interested in knowing, as you move from a large company to a small one, especially as a consultant, what skills translated really well for you to come in, the context switching, et cetera, to be able to do things well? And then what are some things that you've potentially had to like unlearn being at a much smaller company so that you can continue to grow within your position as well?
Oh, that's a great question. I think the skills that I'm going to be really tactical. I think the skills
sure.
that were extremely transferable for me in my role were the presentation skills, right? Getting
yep.
an audience to, or developing a story, sort of get an audience bought into, be it, hey guys, we're going to go with this 401k provider, right? And building a story around that, or creating a deck to really demonstrate what our mission, what Zestful's mission is, and what we aim to do for our creators. That skill set of, I guess, storytelling, I felt was like really transferable Granted, am I still learning? Am I still improving in those areas? Absolutely. But that was like that was a skill set that was pretty unique to consulting, and that I was constantly sort of having to present, you know, what I'd worked on to my clients and presenting them in a way so I can show them like this is the work you paid for, and this is the value that's going to add to you, right? And I think I'm doing not that I think I am doing a lot of the same things here at Zestful too. The one thing I would say to answer the second part of your question, I would say the skill that wasn't as transferable, or I really tried too hard to optimize for in the beginning, was process development. And what I mean by that is oftentimes what I've learned in the last sort of 4 months that I've been at Zestful is sometimes you just have to like do it. Just have to you have a problem, find a solution. I was very much used to sort of creating a process for every single question that I had, every single initiative that I wanted to move forward. It's like, all right, this is how I'm going to do it. This is why. And I realized really quickly that A, I did not, no one has the time. I didn't even have the time to sort of sit through and talk through all of the process that I was trying to drum up and create. I just had to do it, and I had to just sort of trust that my intuition or the data that I used to sort of, you know, come around the solution, or I just had to trust that that's what I need to do. And if it breaks something, then we'll fix it then and there. And then perhaps later on you can process like what you've done to get there. But I spent a lot less time now just creating a process for things that I'm yet to do. I'm just doing them, and then if they work, I'm documenting them, and if they don't work, I still document them so that I know what not to do for the future.
I got you. And at this point that you've been, are you a team of one, or have you grown your team as well?
I am still a team of one, but the interesting thing is, at Zestful, and I'm sure it's true for a lot of other earlier stage companies, where everyone is wearing multiple hats. Everyone is chipping in where they can. If you see something that you can do, and you like, I'll get a good example of this is our quote unquote community lead. She is like such a rock star. She develops, she designs. And so there is really no, I guess, parameters by which you can operate in your role. It's kind of like, if you can do it, do it. And again, that was something that I had to learn, because I spent so much of my career sort of saying, hey, I see that. I think this is how to solve it. Here's a process to solve it. And folks are kind of, and in this context, it's like, all right, do it, you know? And that's been something that I've been learning, and I'm still learning.
Sure. Can we, if you happen to have examples, can we talk about the first time where you're like, okay, I'm going to pick this thing up because it needs to get done, and it's not necessarily within my job description, but I'm going to do it. And what was it? And like, since then, what are some hats that you've had to wear where it's, you had to learn, it was outside of, say, business ops?
I have an example, and you could probably argue that it is part of business operations or not. At a Facebook, it wouldn't be, but at Zestful, it is.
Sure.
So we, as part of launching our digital commissions tool, right, at some point we will have opened up the floodgates for any creator. I mean, right now the creators that we have on our platform are established names, but we will open up the wait list that we have to the entire sort of comic creator community. And in doing so, there are a bunch of legal ramifications that as a business you want to put in place so that folks aren't, for example, ripping off of artwork from maybe some other bigger players in the space. And I don't need to say the names, but you know who I'm talking about.
Sure.
And so we were talking through, do we need to update? Do we need to create a creator agreement? Because right now we have a terms of use. We had a privacy policy. We have some initial sort of legal documents that, you know, if you come to our site, you're basically accepting, right? But we didn't really have one that was actually creator facing. We didn't have one that was from the creator standpoint. We had one that was from the standpoint of the fans that visit the site. And so I was like thinking, we were thinking through like, oh wait, do we need to sort of like think about this? Do we need to think of like, can our creators do anything they want? What can our creators can't do? And so these are the types of questions that we were starting to ask. And so I remember just sort of coming with all these questions of things to consider. And I was talking to our founders, and they said, I mean, just do it, just write it out. And so I wrote, you know, our creator agreement, which I had never written a creator agreement before.
Yeah.
And again, lawyers don't kill me or don't, you know, don't DM me. I know that I'm not a lawyer, but.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know, obviously with, you know, obviously we got sort of legal advice on those agreements, but like I took the first step of at least drafting what our creator agreement should look like.
Yeah.
And that's a perfect example of just something that like wasn't really part of the job description. It wasn't really something that I anticipated I'd be working on, but it needed to be done because we, again, anticipate, you know, having a whole host of people coming on our platform and creating with Dust
yeah.
World. And so we want to make sure that we're protecting ourselves and also protecting the creators that work so hard.
Yeah, I love that. I think when you're at this early stage, let's say something legal at this point, you got to do like the first 90% of it and then have somebody else get you across the other 10%.
Yeah.
You got to do a lot of the heavy lifting yourself. You just got to figure it out.
You just got to figure it out.
I love that. Charles, looking back over the past few months that you've been at Zest World, some can say it's a short time, but in a startup world, that's like 4 years.
Yeah.
What are the things that you have learned about yourself given the experience that you've had so far?
I'm going to give you the most cheesy answer, but it comes to
Please.
Mind. I am more capable than what I thought. I'm capable of doing much more than what I thought I could do. And I think we didn't really talk about it as much, but in the beginning, the first few weeks, the first month, my boss was like, oh, you know, you're probably going to feel like some weird, because my boss is also a former consultant, and he had mentioned that
yeah.
you know, you're going to feel like you're an imposter. And again, I was naive, and I was like, yeah, sure, of course. But like, I really, truly, I had many moments where I was just like, have I gotten myself way over my head? Can I really do this? Can I really execute in the ways that, you know, my boss, the team want me to execute, that I want to execute
yeah.
myself? And I realized just looking back over the past 4 months, like I am more than capable. And of course, there will be many more moments where I'll feel like an imposter. But with a great team behind you, with folks who are supporting you, like anyone, I think anyone is more than capable of achieving what they want to achieve. I know that sounds like a pull from some great quote book, but it is so true in that sometimes you just got to do it. And just
yeah.
trust the process.
Charles, it's definitely coming from the Book of Charles, which I love. And I think you're absolutely right. I think individuals who don't experience imposter syndrome working at a early stage company are either have done this before and like are used to it at this point, or they're an outlier.
Yeah.
And I think to a certain degree that imposter syndrome in a healthy dose is good. Because then it pushes you to continue to be like, okay, I can do this. Like, I need to figure this out. And the more you figure it out, the better you come at it.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's bring it home. Fill in the blank for me. Working at an early stage company is?
Working at an early stage company is being uncomfortable most of the time,
yes,
but allowing yourself grace to feel comfortable when it counts.
Good Lord, Charles, I need you to write a book. The Book of Charles needs to happen. That's awesome. Yes, 100%. Yes, you're definitely correct. You mentioned this earlier, so I'm going to bring it back up and put
sure.
you on the spot. What is your favorite movie?
Oh, that's hard. I don't have one favorite, but I have many favorites. I will give you one because that was a question. My favorite
okay.
movie in this moment right now, it won't change in 2 minutes, but is Howl's Moving Castle, directed by Hayao Miyazaki.
Okay.
It's a story of a girl who is just, who really thinks of herself as ordinary, but just a lot of extraordinary things happen to her and and things ensue, I guess. I'm probably doing a terrible job describing it, but that's my favorite movie.
Awesome. Last question for you. Looking back, and not necessarily at Zestworld, you can include Zestworld if you want, but overall in your career, who have been one or two individuals that have been influential in your career that you'd love to give a shout out to?
Sure. There are two individuals. The first individual that really I have to give a lot of credit to is probably my first consulting manager. His name is Erez Zabitan. He saw something that I, again, at that point in my career, I didn't see it myself. Again, apologize for the cheesy quotes, but he really understood what my skill sets were and was the first person that taught me that, the first manager that I had that really sat down and helped me sort of optimize in the areas I was really good at and really was hyper-focused on developing me in my areas of improvement. And so that was, and I had mentioned that something that I did when I led teams, that skill set was completely gained from that experience working with him because he never, I don't know, he probably doesn't know, I mean, he'll know this now, but that was instrumental in developing my confidence in my career and just having someone really sort of sit with me and invest in me in a way in which I can grow and thrive for the next sort of, I mean, better part of a decade. The second person that I would really love to shout out is actually my current boss. He'll probably laugh at this, but I know this is the case for many people, but I truly, truly felt like I was at a disadvantage coming into this role and that I really felt like I had concerns that I would even be good at it. And Chris Gilberti, who's the founder and CEO of Zestworld, he is so great at just encouragement and really sort of a lot. And what he does for me that's really helpful is I'll complain. I'll say, you know, I don't think I did a great job here. Or I think I could really improve in this area. And he'll sort of say, well, actually, I think you did a good job and this is why. Not just sort of say, oh, you're doing great. Like he really sort of will take the time and be really thoughtful about helping me see the areas that I'm actually doing really great at, because it's not, oftentimes it's not very helpful to just dwell on like all the things that we did bad. I mean, we could all sort of sit down and go ad hominem about every bad thing that we've done, right? But he really sort of stops and checks me and will say, hey, like you've actually like done this and that. And I think that's something that I just really, I find that's an invaluable trait of his that I couldn't ask for a better boss, and because he does that for me.
Yeah, that's great leadership. Charles, thank you so much for coming on, sharing your experience. I'll be patiently waiting for a Book of Charles to drop sooner than later.
Thank you.
And and best wishes to you and Zestworld.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time.
If you stuck around and are still here, thank you so much again for taking the time out of your day to join us and to listen to this episode. Whether you enjoyed it or not, I'd love to hear from you as your feedback helps make the show better. Please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating or review on the platform that you listen to this show. To catch all the latest, follow us on Instagram or LinkedIn, both under the name or handle The Early Team. Catch y'all soon. Bye!